ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here today. The purpose of this meeting is to hold a public hearing for the purposes of receiving a report from legal counsel, Mr. Bob Bass, with the law firm of Allison and Bass out of Austin, who has been working diligently for several months on our redistricting process. This is only the commissioner's court redistricting and does not include the any JP Constable or other city office redistricting. It's that will come later once these boundaries are approved. One of the reasons that we have to do this under federal law every 10 years is whenever our populations within each of the four precincts differ by more than 10% or a deviation of more than 10%, and that in fact occurred during this last 10-year period. Precinct 3, Commissioner Senegal's precinct, lost population as a result of Hurricanes Rita and Ike, and there has to be a reshuffling of population groups, hopefully in a way that maintains community identities and in a way that also maintains the ability of ethnic minorities to obtain representation based on percentages of populations within the county. Mr. Bass is going to go over background federal law that relates to redistricting and the constitutional considerations that go into it. He's as well going to present the plan that the commissioners are presenting to the public for consideration. So with that, Mr. Bass, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Judge. Redistricting is a duty that is imposed on governmental entities by way of the federal constitution. Article 1, Section 2 of that founding document requires that the Congress be reapportioned after each federal census so that each representative in the House of Representatives represents roughly or even more narrowly than that, as much as possible, the same number of people. That concept of numerical and proportional representation has been handed down to smaller governmental units over the years by both statute and by case law. Texas Commissioners' Courts came under the obligation in the 1968-1972 time frame as a result of litigation, Avery versus Midland County. In that case, Midland County was divided into four geometric equal quadrants. The city of Midland was wholly contained in the northeast quadrant and had about 30,000 of the county's 35,000 population at the time. Mr. Avery filed suit, was a city council member. He was complaining that it took approximately 15,000 voters to elect a commissioner in one precinct and as few as 500 to elect in another. That disparity of population representation led to the Supreme Court to hand down a decision that said that such disparity violated the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. So mechanically, the process is relatively straightforward, but it is somewhat complicated, and I'll go into that here in a moment. But you simply take the county's total population and divide it by the number of representative seats on the executive board of the governing body. In this case, that would be the commissioner's court. I use the term representative in a legal sense in that the commissioner's seats are elected from precincts, geographic areas, and they set policy. They make policy, make law, set the tax rates for the county. As such, they are representative seats that are subject to proportional representation requirements. Other types of governmental bodies or offices are not deemed representative in the sense that, for example, a JP does not make law. JP executes law or enforces the law, as does the constable. in that precinct, but those officers, because they're not deemed to be representative seats, are not subject to proportional representation obligations. So the Commissioner's Court is, and that's how we will do this project. We divide the total population by four, not five. The judge is elected at large, so his seat, although he's a voting member of the Commissioner's Court, is not subject to balance since he runs from the county as a whole. Those officers that do run from precincts, the commissioners, then we look at their four seats, we divide by four, we get an ideal precinct size of about 63,068 people. We then count the population within the existing boundaries to determine how close they are to being that ideal size. And we discover that Precinct 1 is overpopulated by 4,700 people, 4,724, and that Precinct 3 is underpopulated by 7,997. That gives us a top-to-bottom range, and if that top-to-bottom range exceeds 10%, we're required to redraw our boundaries. As you can see, Precinct 1 alone is at 7.5% deviation. Precinct 3 is at 12.68. So Precinct 3 alone would require adjustment, but Precinct 1 and 2 are likewise taken together. They would exceed 10%. The only district that really requires little modification is 4 at 1.48. So 1, 2, and 3 need to be slightly rebalanced. Once you determine that you're going to need to make change, you want to look at the ethnicity of your county and try to preserve minority populations in terms of representation and the like. Now, these are the numbers before we do any changing at all, but it shows that your county ethnic makeup is rather complicated in that you have 45% Anglo, 33% Black, 16.5% Hispanic, and nearly 3.5% Asian. We usually look at minority populations when they exceed about 3%. So the Asian population is just above that threshold, and it's difficult to aggregate those numbers, but you'll see that we've made some effort to do so. Let's look at the boundaries that we have developed. And let me go into a little bit about how this process is done. We take the census data, and it is, the way that's counted is we go in, let me turn on a block and zoom in to show you how census blocks are configured. Census blocks are not really designed to be logical. They, in fact, many times are not logical, but they are simply the result of a computer program that takes a topo map that has on there that map such things as canals, roadways or residential streets, highways or railroads, lake shores. They also have such thing as municipal boundaries, other governmental entity, taxing entity boundaries. So there are all sorts of lines. And then the computer is simply asked, now where you find closure among those lines, that becomes a census block. So for example, a census block can look something like this, rather irregular, and as you can see, they don't always break at features that cross through them. Why that is, I'm not able to tell you. It just sometimes defies some logic. But in this case, that census block is rather large, and as you can see, it sort of wraps around other census blocks. When you fill out your questionnaire for the Census Bureau, there's a barcode on the back of that, and it will be coded to match up with a census block. And that's how they put the population in the census block. if there are, there are also populations, unfortunately, who don't return their census forms or never get one because they're, they move and we don't know exactly where they are, there are estimates built into the census that attempt to statistically quantify uncounted populations, but those are somewhat subject to some question, but they are, there is an attempt to count them in the census. Once we get census blocks, we typically start out with the layer that we call the voting block, or VTD, voter tabulation districts. And this is how we, in larger populations, in Jefferson County as such, that we do have the ability sometimes to move whole boxes, voting boxes, and that is in fact what we did here to some extent. We, to balance, as one of the problems with Jefferson County is, I back off and show you the county as a whole, and as you can see, the population, as I said before, is District 1 was overpopulated. It's at the extreme north of the county. District 3 is the most undercounted, and it is at the extreme south end of the county, and there's no physical contact point between those two districts. So in order to get population into 3, essentially we have to take population out of 1, move it into 4, move population out of 4 into 2, and then finally out of 2 into 3. So that means more change than you would like. You would like to see your extreme counties touching each other, but in this case they do not. As I say though, District 2 was a little bit overpopulated, so we did some adjusting to it. But essentially, in a very quick analysis or very quick explanation of the changes that were made, is that we took voting box 89 and box 7, which are these two boxes here that were formerly in precinct 1, and moved those over into precinct 4, and that was a transfer of about 3,700 people. Now that's one of the changes that we made. Other changes that were made essentially were in boxes 67, which is right in here, was this area. As you can see, this is a large box that spills over from District 4. Some of that population right in here was moved into District 2 out of District 4. Likewise, we had some population in box 21. This reddish color area was in District 2, was shed back into 4. We had to move that block to provide continuity of District 2. As you can see, that if we took that area right in there out, it would divide this part of 2 with the western part of 2. So that was to preserve continuity in that district. Down in box 61, down here, we moved about 3,000 people out of 2 into 3.
That's the area bordered by Highway Patrol, right?
Now, again, we have two objectives. One is to achieve numerical balance, but also controlling and requiring us to take certain actions is the Voting Rights Act. And so the population in this box, 61, is largely Anglo, and so there is a split of a portion of that box north of Highway 73 that remains in two, and what we were attempting to do is get the numerical balance but to find populations that were sufficiently mixed that it did not upset the representation on the court in terms of ethnicity. The plan achieves those objectives, I think, relatively well. As you can see, we went from a 20% deviation down to about 4.29. We are required to bring it under 10, but we try to give you some headroom by bringing that as close as we can down to roughly zero, but it's often difficult to bring it down that far without radicalizing the lines. We try to preserve voting boxes and communities of interest intact. And so 4.29 is an excellent result. We sort of set 5% as a threshold that we'd like to see. That gives you quite a bit of room for growth or shifting of populations in the future. It's unlikely that you will avoid redrawing boundaries, but if you size your districts any higher than about 5%, you're almost sure to redraw lines in 10 years. Whereas if you give yourself as much room as you can, you have a better chance of avoiding redistricting in 10 years. Ethnically, the districts shake out like this. Precinct 1 is about 59% Anglo, 25% African American or Black, 9.5% Hispanic. The Asian content in 1 is about 4.3%. Precinct 2 is about 77% Anglo, 7% Black, 2.4% Asian, and about 12.26% Hispanic. District 3 is 26% Anglo, 37.8% Black, 29.68% Hispanic, and nearly 5% Asian. And District 4 is 16.8% Anglo, 63% Black, 16.5% Hispanic. Voting age populations, likewise, districts 3 and 4 remain viable as ethnic precincts, meaning that in these districts, at these levels of voting age population, given the assumption that a candidate would be able to attract broad support, they should be able to be elected. This does not guarantee an outcome, but it does provide a realistic opportunity for continued minority representation on the commissioner's court in two of the four commissioner's districts. In sizing the districts, we use tools to identify where those populations are. As we back out, you can see shading in some of the areas. This tells us where Black population in this instance is located. It helps us as we're drawing these boundaries that we don't fragment or dilute that population unnecessarily. Sometimes you do draw lines simply, as I say, this line is mandated to keep continuity. You might want to associate that population more to four, but we have to have it here to preserve continuity for two. This arm is reaching up is to gain some population in this area for Precinct 3's minority content. So we do the same with Hispanic populations. You can see where Hispanic populations tend to be. There's really not real cohesive, compact minority populations that show up as dense populations. These percentages simply help us sort of see where in census blocks there are concentrations of minorities. The same with the Asian population. So we've done that throughout, trying to see where minority populations are so that we can preserve those minority communities intact. I believe this plan will meet Justice Department requirements and would result in pre-clearance. Always we like to see, and we solicit support from the community. And so if that sort of concludes my summary remarks, I'd be glad to answer questions either from the court or if the public has any questions that would relate to the process or the legal issues that we deal with.
I want to invite any members of the gallery to come up now to give any comments, to ask any questions that they might have that relate to the drafting of the redistricting plan. I know that before Mr. Bass began this process, he had a full head of hair.
it was nice and brown, too.
But he's been in this business for 30-odd years and has done an outstanding job. Obviously, it's an extremely complicated process and requires a drawing together of numerous tranches of information from which he has to draft his conclusions. He also has to work with all the members of the commissioner's court. Obviously, I'm not as involved in the process because of the at-large nature of my position, but he has worked very closely in many hours with Commissioner Senegal and Commissioner Alfred, as well as Commissioner Weaver and Arnold. And so we want to hear anything that you have to say, and we want to attempt to allow Mr. Bass to answer any questions you have. If you do have any comments or questions, please come to the podium because we're recording these proceedings. It's our anticipation that we are going to present in Commissioner's Court on Monday an order for consideration by the court to begin the process of publishing and submitting this plan to the Department of Justice for clearance. Mr. Howard, as tax assessor collector, is going to have to send out the new voter registration card sometime between November 6th and November 15th and December 6th. The Justice Department requires 60 days to give us pre-clearance on this. Ms. Guidry has been kind enough to offer to put the information that Mr. Bass has provided on the county internet site, so it will be available between now and Monday for members of the public to access and come to Commissioner's Court on Monday to give any input as we consider adopting this order of approval. Commissioners, any comments? The podium is open, so please feel free to come forward with any questions or comments.
Charlie Wiggins, Constable Precinct 1. I'm sorry, I missed. When would this go into effect? I don't know about that.
The boundaries will go into effect officially for January 1.
2012?
Yes, of this coming year. The first election that they will be applied to is the March primary. Filing period for that election opens November 12. And so we hope to have the plan pre-cleared before 1st of November.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and Mr. Bass, since we do have several elected officials here who do run from precincts, can you explain the process going forward on how we're going to,
there are three,
or what we anticipate we're going to do?
Right, there are three layers of election boundaries that we're working with. One is the commissioner's boundaries, and as I mentioned in my opening remarks, that is the one that has to be numerically balanced. The other districts aren't under a numerical balance standard, but they are under voting rights review obligation. So We set the commissioner's boundaries first because that sets the proportionality. And then we conform the voting boxes to the new boundary for the commissioner's lines. And then we lay in the JP lines and make sure that there's not any overlap or conflict between the two. I don't anticipate there will be because we're only modifying, we're taking whole boxes and we're only modifying, I believe, three boxes, and no incumbents live within the areas that are being modified. So I don't expect we're going to have any conflicts. A voting box can only contain territory from one, or cannot have territory from more than one, commissioner's line, JP line, state rep, state senate, state board of education, or city ward in cities with single member districts having a population of more than 10,000. So there are going to be some, and I think your existing boundaries track all of those features. So I guess what to answer your question, Judge, the court will adopt a set of boundaries for the commissioner's lines, and then very shortly after that, we will provide maps to Ms. Guidry, and in conjunction with her office and mine, we will harmonize the maps and make sure y'all are all okay with that. We will then submit to you a what's known as a supplemental order. That supplemental order will adopt the new voting boxes, if any, and hopefully we can find a way to consolidate some boxes because we have some what are called sliver districts that have very few voters in them, and yet we still have to bear the expense of fully staffing those polling places, and we hope to save some money there if we can. It's not always possible, but we'll try to avoid creating new boxes and try to eliminate those that reasonably can be eliminated without putting the public at greater inconvenience. The state law, since we did this 10 years ago, has changed somewhat. It allows us to size up as voting machines have become more prevalent and more efficient. So we can size up some of your districts and have fewer voting boxes, but at possibly better locations. So hopefully all of that will be done so that in November your elections administrator can issue new voter registration cards so that the voters will know their new card will tell them what boxes they're in. There's a lot of work to be done between now and the next couple of weeks, so we need you to go ahead and move forward on a plan for the commissioner's lines.
Yes, and Mr. Bass, I want for the record, I want to thank you for understanding the sensitivity of this process. I got an education of the process in the last 8 or 9 months that, you know, make me appreciate what you do, being sensitive to representation across the board as well as actively sitting elected officials is something that's not always thought through. But I know we had several other plans that came out, and I want to thank the commissioner, other commissioners, as well as the judge on their input. And actually, I think we got through it pretty good without a lot of hostilities or conflicts.
These things are always stressful because somebody's having to give up constituents that they've worked hard for or in the last few years, and somebody else is getting new people that they don't know possibly very well. And there's always political anxiety, and I want to pat this group on the back as well, the sense of cooperation and understanding of this process is not something we necessarily do just because we want to, or it's not done lightly. It's a very serious undertaking, and everybody on the court worked with me very well, understanding that there's going to be some compromise and give and take, and so I commend the court for being willing to understand, walk in the other guy's shoes a little bit, and I found that the process went really pretty smoothly here. It's not always done that way.
Right, and with Port Arthur mainly losing 4,000, possibly more citizens, that caused us even a little bit more stress on this to try and recoup some of that representation. And I think the court went out their way, including Commissioner Weaver, to try and accommodate me in a way that would sensitive to my base.
It's always difficult, and like you say, I think the fact that displacement by natural disaster mean that people actually moved out of the district and probably won't come back.
Yeah.
And trying to preserve minority strength in that district was not easy. But I think the compromises that were made were minimal change that was necessary, but had to be done to do that. And I commend the court for being willing to work with us on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
If it's possible to actually eliminate and consolidate whole boxes into one, two boxes into one.
Boxes? How about precincts?
Voting boxes.
Precinct.
In other words, you can consolidate and have multiple boxes vote at one location, or you can consolidate and meld two boxes into one, or parts of multiple boxes into fewer boxes. And so where we can, I would recommend that that be done.
Mr. Bass, there should be a process. I want to make sure that the sensitivity is taken on the side of the citizens, that especially in my precinct that I represent, that we have quite a bit of education and the community involvement to agree with. If I don't get that, you don't have my support. That's where I stand.
I think the aim, obviously, is for us to consolidate boxes in a way that, number one, maintains identities of community, does not make it unnecessarily difficult for voters to access their polling places for the purposes of casting their vote, but at the same time eliminates small voting boxes where very few voters are actually exercising their right to take part in the political process, and reduce the strain on Ms. Guidry and Ms. Goodness in having to have all these election judges and election workers, clerks, at locations where there's not anybody showing up to utilize their services. That's additional expense to the county. It's additional stress on them in having to man those places. So if we can do so, you know, I certainly support that. If we can do it without unduly putting the voters at a disadvantage whenever it comes time to vote, or geographically distributing them in a manner that's too far from where their polling place is.
Certainly we're not going to do this again carelessly or frivolously. I want recommendations from your office as to where you think those things can be done most effectively, and of course we'll submit a map showing those changes before it's adopted. All of this has to be pre-clear.
It has to be, exactly. It has to be pre-clear.
Any change in policy, practices, procedures, locations, any change has to be pre-clear.
That's separate.
That's the plan, yes, sir. That's the way we typically do it. Now, on some issues, and we're not talking about that here at all, but for example, if a county were to seek to consolidate JP and reduce the number of JPs, that's usually pretty controversial. And we might separate those out and submit a commissioner's line and a voting box line in one submission, and a JP consolidation in a second, so that if one draws an objection, it doesn't pull the whole thing down.
not, we'll bring this meeting to an end. I'll remind everyone that there's a FEMA meeting over in the agricultural auditorium right now to discuss the new mapping that they've done in the flood zones in Jefferson County and some information. I believe that meeting started at 1:30. So thank all of you for being here today. If you have any further comment or after you've had an opportunity to study what's going to be put on the county's website, if you have any other questions or comments, we will have it on the agenda for Monday during Commissioner's Court, and we'll be happy to receive input at that point in time. If otherwise, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Yep.